While waiting in line at Fishkill Farms for my vegetable sandwich, I heard a kerfuffle behind me. It was a mother with three daughters, and the three daughters all had different needs. One of them wanted to mess with the condiments table. Another one wanted to pet a service dog that was nearby. And this mother had an impossible job. She was trying to juggle all of their different needs and answer all of their questions. As the youngest daughter went towards the condiment table to clean it up, she stopped her, but explained that it was good that she was trying to clean up the condiments, but that she probably shouldn't touch them with her bare hands. Meanwhile, the other girls are asking her questions and she's answering them, and it just really brought into focus for me how much I adore helping people. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Obviously, the nine-dimensional chess game of motherhood is a whole subject in itself, but it reminded me how much of my life I've really looked forward to helping people understand things or putting them in contact with what they're looking for. Obviously, I have a collector's spirit. I'd been putting things onto floppy disks for years and years, and other collections that I had were assembling in my attics and basements and shipping containers. But it wasn't really enough just to have that huge pile. I wanted people to benefit from it. Everything, it feels like, has been some variation of that ever since. When I was a temp, I wasn't really happy with being given a simple job and getting through it and getting my paycheck. I wanted to leave the place a little bit better than how I found it. When it came to working at the game company Psygnosis, I was a technical support person. I handled calls all day from people who were not getting games to work correctly, and I wanted them to leave the call happy. I didn't care about metrics. I didn't care about sales. I wanted a person who thought they were going to have fun that night get the fun they were seeking. Sitting on top of thousands of files that I'd collected all through my teens and 20s, I wanted a website where everybody could get to them whenever they wanted to and derive value from that information. Not money, not sales, but value. Fast forward to today, and my entire life is nothing but reaching out to people and hopefully leaving them better than how I found them. Maybe not always, but mostly. In the past week, I've dealt with getting rid of spammers, helping mirror the Oya video game system, transferring thousands of magazines, moving around CD-ROMs and VHS tapes to make them easier to find, and adding entries to a wiki about the Internet Archive with the hope that people will learn how to do things better. I also started open sourcing the tools I use at the archive, the ones that don't require admin access. That's where I get my joy. It's fun to fight online. It's fun to get into skirmishes and debates and argue about this or that minor point. But if that's all I leave behind me, that's a pretty poor conclusion. There were two different kinds of people involved with bulletin board systems. Users and sysops. Users would call into the BBS, leave messages, download files, post different things that they thought were important, or use them as excuses to get the ratio to download the things that they wanted. Sysops, however, were of a completely different breed. You're sacrificing your machine, the thing you may have spent thousands of dollars on, and the thing you want to use for the pleasure of others. The machine that you paid so much money for, a special phone line and modem, you've left it running all day with the hope that others will come to you and make use of it. Within a very short time, you find yourself wrangling different factions, you're answering all sorts of queries, you're having things crash and break and you have to fix them. Maybe you run out of disk space and have to buy more. You run out of memory and have to buy more. You are constantly in a state of maintenance, supervision, and getting involved. Always getting involved. Nothing can be left aside for later. This is your inn, you are the innkeeper, and people need you. A lot of people would burn out after a few months. It was just so much time and so much expense. They just had the fun of doing it until it wasn't fun at all. But the people who stayed at it, who made it a part of their lives for years, sometimes decades, they were people who had that altruistic, helpful spirit. I met many people like that. I got to be one of them after a fashion. The Works BBS was a dream come true. I had been hoping to run a BBS from the moment that I first connected. I knew that's what I wanted, but I didn't have the resources to do so until the end of my high school years. Before then, I was a co-sysop. I liked logging in on a regular basis to make sure everything was running just right and lend a hand wherever I was needed. I mean, to be clear, I was a teenager. I was pretty self-centered. I was pretty directed towards my own needs and thinking of myself first. I didn't have inherently some sort of good when it came to being a sysop. I didn't look at it as a higher calling or a desire to be on the side of good. It just attracted me more. The ability to have a place where all these files were going out, to see them getting use, that was what drove me. It just happened to be that people came along with the deal, and I realized I liked doing that too. After I stopped running my BBS when I went to college, I didn't have any place for that anymore until I co-founded a MUD named Tiny Tim. The MUD still exists 25 years later, but it had a very unusual and unique code structure. It was a version of TinyMush version 1.0 that had forked away literally decades before, and it has all sorts of unique commands, functions, flags, and nowhere you could go to understand them. After about 3 or 4 years, I decided to step in and start writing help files. I found it very informative to look at a system for the purposes of teaching other people about it, to write paragraphs of text and come up with examples that they could use. As I tested these different functions, I would find bugs or strange behavior or come to a greater understanding of something that I thought I knew pretty well. It made me a better programmer of this obscure little language, and it also helped me connect with the users of the game. Folks appreciate when you take the time to document things. It's a rewarding behavior. The relatively small user base of Tiny Tim was very happy that somebody was making an effort. It turned out I liked writing documentation. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much if it was my professional career, but I absolutely loved explaining things in text files to make things easier for the next people down the line. This is rapidly disappearing, but something about those early websites, when it was a little difficult to set up a web server and provide pages, it was so alluring to come up with this publishing platform, start to write your ideas, and then present them to an imagined audience that would hopefully grow over time. We have echoes of it now, but it was such an interesting time in 1993, long before commercial businesses turned everything into a strip mall, to find people actually accessing your website because they were curious, because they wanted to, not because it was their job or because they had no other choice because of how things were designed. In this realm, I made a whole variety of web pages, either for my game or for myself, and making art and essays and trying to imagine a directory structure with links going between it that would be of interest to somebody coming in. The drive to be a sysop is like the desire to be the editor of a zine, the developer of a game, where people come in and find the hidden treasures, the little jokes, the beautiful ways of writing that you wanted them to enjoy and feel a little enlightened, a little closer to where you were. It is and continues to be such a delight to give people a little help. Actually, here's an example of how a little help goes a long way. 20 years ago, I remember going to my first DEF CON. DEF CON, being held in Las Vegas, experiences incredible amounts of heat, and the really dry weather sucks all of the moisture out of your body. If you're not used to this, if you judge sweating as being whether or not you are getting heat stroke, I wasn't well. I was getting dizzy, confused. I was standing by the pool, looking probably really lost. Nobody knew who I was, why I was there, and I don't know what I was doing there. And I heard a voice behind me, this gentle southern voice I won't insult by trying to imitate, and a fellow said, "Hey, you look like you could use some help. You want to come get a drink?" And I said yes. He walked away from the pool, over to his door of his suite. Inside were a whole bunch of people sitting around on couches, on beds, all talking, all hanging out. The air conditioner was on full blast. It started to make me feel better immediately. And he walked over to a bar that was resplendent in all sorts of drinks, and he offered me a little bit of Gatorade. And I drank that Gatorade, and I didn't know how messed up I was until I started feeling the hydration make me normal again. That guy's name was Strick Strickland, a hacker from the Yak Group, and that little act of kindness has stuck with me for decades. The world does not entirely seem nice right now. We are definitely engineering for conflict and disagreement and never letting it go. In terms of my own part of that, let he without the obviously bloody hammer cast the first stone, but I like to think that for people who come to me with no other connection but just needing to be informed, needing to understand things, that I try to treat them with the respect and understanding of what they're trying to learn and to give it to them dozens of times a day in private and public conversation. Not because it's my job, not because I have some sort of mandate telling me to do this, but because I think it makes the world better. I think it makes it better for everyone. When somebody falls into this tangled yarn ball of the technical world with all of its caveats and one-offs and special cases, that if somebody just gives them a little leg up, that person will come back and be an important part of the communities and the world and making things better down the line. The work I did recently with opening up the Infocom source code, as well as work with my own source code from working at the archive, has once again put me in contact with GitHub. GitHub is a company that is worth billions of dollars because it sort of makes Git easy to use. Git is terrible. What an embarrassment that thing is. It gives you source control at the price of sanity. I don't know how people deal with it, other than a company that made lots of money making it a little bit easier to use. It reminds me a lot of the dark days of mail clients and interacting with spam filters and all of the technical stuff that I so delightedly shoved into a hamper in my mind and then set it on fire. All of that knowledge, I like to think, is gone. I am happy that I don't wake up sweating in the middle of the night trying to remember the format for the sendmail language or how to set up a Bayesian filter to work with mail to prevent this onslaught waterfall from choking up my ability to talk to others. I'm very happy that's all gone from my mind. However, GitHub has brought a little bit of that back. But why do I use it? I use it because it reaches out to a lot of people, because it hosts things in a way that is relatively clear. It allows folks to get to the information, derive value from it, and respond. But also, the years and years and years of GitHub's work has resulted in so many help files, tutorials, taking it from a simple approach all the way up to an extremely complicated walkthrough and support script. In fact, with GitHub, one sees the whole spectrum of how help works. Some people just like formulas. In the technical world, these are called recipes. They've been around since the Unix days. A simple set of commands where you don't have to understand why the recipe works, just that it works. All the way through to long, endless paragraphs of the features and theories behind some technology so that you, the engineer, will know exactly why everything does what it does. I mentioned being an early webmaster, and let's not fool ourselves. HTML is nobody's buddy. I know that it's supposed to be obvious how there are tags and they open and close. It's just the fact that if you go to anything beyond the first few simple tags, it gets ugly indeed. The addition, over the years, of CSS and scripting and all sorts of embedded information, I benefit from this every single day with the emulator, it did bring us further away from the light. In 2019, if you go to the google.com website and view the source, you will be shocked at the eldritch horror that it is. That simple-looking site is not a center tag. It is a horrifying set of proprietary tags that work within the Chrome browser and then adjust themselves for the other browsers with a slightly diminished presentation to make you feel like rival browsers aren't worth your time. Compared to the almost childlike joy of those first few years, we are in a dark place indeed. But I don't want to get trapped in a whole "the old times were great, the new times are terrible" sort of narrative, because that's not true at all. Things are so much easier to use now. I do things without even thinking about it in the present era I couldn't dream of doing in 100 years in the 80s. When I think about the fact that I would save text files that were nothing more than transcriptions of news services simply because there were so few, and I compare that to what we get now, I mean, what a difference. Same things for pictures and music. It's a much better world to be able to choose among information instead of holding up whatever text file happened to make it online and acting like it was great just because that happened. It's a much better world in many, many ways. But it is more complicated. It definitely leaves a lot of people behind. And I feel in my heart that we benefit, every one of us, when we take the effort and the time to help others. I still get a joy out of somebody connecting to me who doesn't understand the opaqueness of the archive system or can't quite find a game that they really liked or want to know why the emulation isn't doing what it's supposed to, and giving them either a little bit of help, a file to put in, or a step to take, and the happiness that they send back to me that it works for them. If I really sit down and think about it, in the modern era, in my present day, that's the most valuable thing of all. To be the part of somebody's life where maybe they don't know that they're roasting in the sun and need guidance. Maybe to be led somewhere where you've helped other people, offered something, and given a memory of being treated well that they keep in their heart for decades to come. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I've known Strick ever since that time I met him in 1999, and I could probably fill several episodes with the things that he has been interested in, the stuff he does, the endless curiosity. But there's one project he got involved in that I will mention. At one point, he wanted to make another computer language. He just wanted to try it, an experiment, literally fun, like somebody doing model rocketry or building a go-kart. Just something to try, learn, do on the weekends, do in his off hours, challenge himself. He went about it in a very interesting way. Going after auctions and used online bookstores, he started to buy every manual for every computer language he could find, going back all the way to the dawn of the multi-user computer. Anything involving syntax, construction, all of the different parts of a computer language. He got the book for obscure one-offs that never really made it out of the planning stage, all the way through to the big names that everyone uses even to this day. Strick bought these, dozens of them. I saw the piles, and he read them all, and from there, he designed his own language. Not only did he design it, he actually made it work. He wrote programs in it. Now, he wasn't going to change the world with this. He wasn't going to turn this into a startup and oversell it and get VC and grab a weird domain name. It was just for the fun of it, the excitement, the learning. I was inspired by that, the idea that you didn't have to make a business case for it. You didn't even have to make a use case for it. There was no baked-in reason for this language that he created. It was just to understand his world a little better, and in doing so, understanding everywhere the world could be. When I remember to, I strive to get out of that box, to ask how much of this just fell together and doesn't mean that it's the best or the way we should go. I love that idea, that universe of possibilities far outside what structure has dropped on us, and maybe becoming a little better at understanding where we could go if we just spoke a different language.